home.
Yeah, it really is such a complex thing to try and get your head around, you know, the whole sort of moral dilemmas and, you know, should we as individuals and as a group be determining, you know, what people can say and do and think? And obviously we have our principles and our policies and I'm sure we ought to stick with them. I am erring on the side of, well, I think the actual proposal by a fellow colleague and comrade from Central Branch actually helps cover some of the dilemmas and gives us that little bit of a safety net, whereby it strikes me as though, you know, for example, you know, if you say you're a minister or a priest or whatever, who's out there sort of preaching the word of their God, his God, her God, on a weekly basis, but wants to join the party, then I can see there'd be a huge contradiction there. And it would be every right and every reason to declare that as being incompatible and to reject that kind of application. That said, I think for some people who maybe have got arguably confusing, you know, thoughts that are more inclined towards spiritual inner kind of sanctity or a kind of inner contentment that they get from maybe having this kind of voice in their head that's kind of helped steering them along in life or whatever, you know. I mean, I very often see Marx as my God. My home's almost like or at least one of my rooms anyway is like a shrine to Marx. Obviously the difference being Marx was a very was a living person being and he did exist and so there's maybe quite a rational reason for having those thoughts. I think, and I am from a purely personal or selfish point of view here, thinking of numbers, and I don't think we'd be selling ourselves too short if we did take our foot off the brakes a little bit and, you know, take each and every applicant on its merits and made it absolutely abundantly clear that we don't believe in God, we don't believe in any kind of organized religion, and so, you know, any thoughts that they have in that direction, they will have to keep to themselves, you know, because it would contradict our party policies and practices if they started preaching out of turn with those. As Mike Foster, comrade Mike Foster, mentioned earlier on, Tim Kilgallen and Mike and I have been working on some stuff in the background. Hopefully it'll be ready and prepared for discussion at ADN. And religion, I had a pretty lengthy conversation with the Equality and Human Rights Commission about this and the legal implications of rejecting a member, and they seem pretty relaxed about it, you know, sort of taking into consideration, well, they're not legal representatives, only a judge can decide if the event to court, but they were of the view that it's very, you know, extremely unlikely that anyone with really strong religious views would want to join the party anyway, and if they tried to do so, it would be deemed as, you know, a kind of frivolous and what was the other word they used? Frivolous, and there was another word they used on the basis that they were essentially troublemakers. You know, they were coming in purely to try and raise. Cause mischief, if you like, and a judge would take a very dim view of that. So, you know, the upshot of it was that no, they were of the opinion in their legal framework that it would still be reasonable for the party to reject anyone on religious grounds, and it wouldn't necessarily be wouldn't be an issue with the Equality Act and legislation. And certainly didn't see that as being a problem. So the bottom line is that I think that I believe that it might be worth a period of reflection and a period of trial to see, you know, if we can take a slightly more relaxed view of people's personal views on religion, and we see a rise in numbers on the back of that, I don't think we'll live to regret it as a party. I think, you know, we want to be thriving, not just surviving, and it means that we might have to lower our standards just a little bit to see how that pans out. I think it certainly might be worth a go. And that's my take on it. There's something else I wanted to say, but it's gone now. It's I'll maybe come back to it later. But that's essentially the way I see it. When I think, you know, in summary, the members, Robin Coxlow from Spain, who wrote the article or wrote the suggestion, and he is a very highly regarded, highly respected member of the party, and I think it ought to be treated as such, definitely well worth consideration and inclusion in the ADM to get everyone's view on it there. Cheers.
Okay, thanks, Paul. A little bit concerned. Mike B is trying to get in. If he's been muted, if he comes back, can somebody unmute him or keep an eye on him?
Sorry for interrupting you, Richard. Yeah, I've sent him a message in. I don't know whether he's seen it. So he's disappeared again, hasn't he?
He's disappeared again. Yeah. Okay, we'll play it by ear then.
Yeah.
Okay. Alan and Janet.
Yeah, it's something somebody said. I can't remember who it was, but it reminded me of an experience I had. It must be about 10 years ago when summer school was held not at Firkroft, but for some reason we had to have it at another place in Birmingham, about 10 years ago. And there was a young woman had come along, and she was new, and really keen, very interested, asking lots of questions. And I don't quite remember how it happened, but it obviously had come up that she had some religious belief. And so there was obviously some discussion about that. And later, she stopped me on the stairs between meetings she was really quite distraught. And she wanted to talk about why is this, what's the problem? You know, she had so much that she related to what everybody was saying, what we talked about. She'd obviously been, looking into the party before she'd come to the weekend. But she really didn't know how to handle it because it was obviously not going down well that she had, and I don't know what the belief was. I mean, it's too long ago for me to recall that all the details. It just struck me because of what somebody said. So anyway, from that, I'm sort of thinking, how we go ahead here, never mind about how we deal with it right now. People have had some very good ideas and various suggestions. But my thought goes something like this. Looking into the future, when we're heading towards, when we really feel, let's hope, that we're heading towards the possibility of getting somewhere close to it, there are going to be so many people around the world who actually will agree with our basic core beliefs. And you'd like that, beliefs, our core beliefs. They won't, I mean, let's face it, most people don't join parties. They will vote for something, but they don't actually join the party. And I think an awful lot of people, when it becomes more in the public eye, that more people would go along with it and they wouldn't even think about joining, but just about actually making the thing happen. I don't think I've ever heard anybody else in the party talk about it like that. Perhaps I'm wrong. Perhaps I just haven't been there at the right time. But I just wonder if anybody can expand on what I'm saying here. It's not just about this party now. It's about establishing socialism, isn't it, worldwide?
Janet, do you have a personal view on how we should view present membership applications with people with religious views?
Oh, it's very difficult. Do you know, long before I found this party, I was so fucking bored with people wanting to talk about religion. Huh. I gave up religion when I was 16 or something. You know, my social life was around the church, and it was great. I learned to play the organ. I sang in the choir. I rang bells. We had a great youth club. We went to the seaside once a year. We had great times. It was nothing to do with God or Jesus or any of that kind of stuff. It was, you know, what I'm saying. I got a lot from it as far as music is concerned. And then I did my degree in music anyway, you know. But so as a student, there was so much talk about it. Yes, lots of people wanted to talk about it. I just got bored and bored and bored with it. And now when I hear it, I don't really want to join in, quite frankly. How you deal with it, I certainly think, yes, like what we call organized religion, where it's that doesn't really seem much different to me than the way we have governments. We're always telling you what to do. You know, it's not democratic. You do this or you're not it. You know, don't see it any really much different from ordinary politics. And it's a matter of how people want to live their life as far as being part of communities, whether it's a small community or the world community. And we should be listening to that, what comes from that. It's that those sort of aspects that come from people, for me, which are much more important.
Can I just cut in here, Richard, with your permission?
Yeah. Okay, go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to make it clear. I converted to atheism at 13 years of age. It seems to me that the party has nothing to fear. We have fundamental principles, and we make it quite clear that the party is not going to be a forum for religious evangelizing, proselytizing, whatever you want to call it. We keep that out of the party. It has no place. And so therefore we have nothing to fear, even from a Church of England vicar, for goodness sake. I really don't believe that as long as it's absolutely clear, and you can expel people from the party if they proselytize. You can tell them to go away and do it elsewhere, take their soapbox away. But the thing, I really do see that there are a lot of good people who have a lot to offer, who are fundamentally socialist in their thinking and in their beliefs, you know, and they may have some religious ganglions, whatever you want to call them, I don't know. We shouldn't feel threatened as a party because our principles are absolutely clear. If I say secular, I know you go in for this historical materialism and all the rest of it. We are clearly that. And I don't think we have anything to fear. As long as people understand that, it shouldn't matter if they go around hugging trees or crossing themselves in front of some bloody icon. It should not matter as long as everything else is in place. That's where I feel about it.
Okay, that's lovely. Thanks, Alan. Mike B, I know you've been trying to get in. Do you want to speak now, please?
Yeah, I keep getting cut off by accident.
I've been watching you.
Can I speak? I see there's three members of the MAC, the Membership Applications people here. So a couple of questions for them while they can give off. The last 5 years, how many people has the religious question or the question of their religious beliefs interfered with them accepting? How many have they had to turn down? Or they had to send a message saying, we can't let you in because of that? over the last 5 years. The other thing is I'm a materialist, and I go along with what the editorial committee wrote all those years ago, 18 years ago now, and what the party endorsed. They're very practical descriptions of what we don't allow in the party. So I'll also ask the MAC to comment. Do they find that those descriptions, as worded by that conference resolution, easy to implement or not? Or if not, what actually needs clarifying? As I say, I'm a materialist. My religion is nature, universe and everything in it, but I don't make a fuss about that.
Great. Thank you, Mike. Vin, you're waiting.
Sorry, should I just attempt to answer those questions?
If you wish to, yes, fine, okay. Howard.
I can't answer the first one, Mike, I'm afraid, because I don't have the figures in front of me of how many people have been turned down for reasons of religion. But when we did that survey requested by a branch, I think it was 2016, that survey of the main reasons why people did not end up joining. Religion did feature second on the list. It's on the page. It's on the useful items page as well. Things may have changed now. It may be first, it may be fourth. I think it's probably a bit lower down now, to be honest, than second. It might be third or fourth. I mean, and what that means in terms of numbers, I'm not sure. I mean, what I discovered, I sort of did a little bit of research on this, and what I discovered was that since I've been on the Membership Applications Committee, that's since 2013, we processed close on 500 applications. Sounds like a lot, but of those, not many more than probably 100 or slightly less actually ended up joining for one reason or the other. But of those who didn't join, there's probably a significant number, I would say, who one of whose objections was religion. How easy are they to implement? That's what I've written down. How easy is it to implement the resolution passed at 2003 conference? Very easy indeed, actually. I mean, if people make it clear that they have a faith-based belief, believe in an afterlife and so on, we have to say that we can't see that that's compatible with party membership, and that's what we would say.
Okay. Moving on, Ben.
Yeah, I'm moving on. The conversation's kind of drifted from where I was. I suppose it's just I have a problem with the idea of people perhaps having a dogma. Was it Paul who said, people who have a belief in a non-interventionist God, well, that's a dogma and they shouldn't be joining. Yeah, I mean, something that's occurred to me this evening that I've really not thought about, like, I've been doing karate for over 30 years, and there comes a point where you kind of do, like, meditation techniques, if you like. I'm completely a materialist, but other people would interpret, the things that I do within say, Zen Buddhism. Which, I don't really see it that way, but it does improve my karate, and I think it's a materialist thing, but perhaps then maybe I shouldn't be a member of the party, because that does kind of come within the remit of dogma. I mean, other things that it occurs to me is that, okay, supposing someone who has all the, sticks to the principles of the party, and then suddenly, perhaps by some brain problem, is convinced they've seen a ghost. Or what about, and I've known Trotskyists, who are UFO followers. I mean, if someone believes in a materialist concept of history, wants to see the abolition of wage labour, but also, has a conviction that there are UFOs, that there are people from other worlds out there, does this stop them from being a party? I mean, what... you know, what's been said before, you know, the fundamental part of the party is to help bring about socialism. Having sort of like these constraints on people who have, you know, left field beliefs, it's not doing us any favours. But I'm thinking maybe, you know, maybe if dogmas are banned, I should have to think about whether I'm qualified to be a member of the Socialist Party of Great Britain. I can't be in a karateka.
Wow. All right. Okay, confession time. Okay, let's go on. Thanks, Vin. Mike Foster.
Yeah, it was going back a bit, but with what Janet said about an old summer school. I remember that one, and it's a shame that the person was upset by the conversation. It shouldn't have happened like that. But I also think, if I'm remembering correctly, she continued to be active as a sympathiser after that. So hopefully, she wasn't too upset by what happened. And yeah, and last year's summer school, I remember some much more amiable chats with some guests who had religious beliefs, which were much more harmonious. So of course, we should always be welcoming. With what Vin was just saying, there's and it's straying the point, so I'll keep it quick. But yeah, there's a materialist explanation of ghosts, the so-called stone tape theory, which is that what we interpret as ghosts are recordings from the past, somehow recorded into the environment. But also as well, I don't think either a belief in extraterrestrial life or karate contradicts socialist beliefs. It's not really a thing to worry about. Vin, hopefully, cheers.
Glad to hear that, because I had a Zen meditation for quite a number of years. Good. Paul Edwards.
Thanks. I too wanted to mention, having been invited to do so by Janet, I have fond memories of that particular summer school. And I remember the girl particularly well. She was there with her daughter, and she was making a real fuss of my guide dog at the time, Big Ron, as he's affectionately known by most members who remember him. She was, and if not a practicing Catholic, but had Catholic beliefs, and she was so frustrated and upset and tearful, but she was not so much torn as she knew which direction she wanted to go in. She wanted to be a member of the party, but was very sad and upset that she wasn't allowed to. But she's from Kent and Sussex area. I still inquire as to what she's and how she's getting on. And the upshot of it is she still is a very active sympathiser, and she also wants to join the party, but she's not prepared to relinquish those Catholic beliefs. Which of course is a shame. I don't think she's a regular church or chapel goer, but she's just not prepared to pass up on those beliefs. Again, you know, I think getting back to what I was saying earlier, it would be I mean, who's to say, for example, someone who has modest beliefs, not practicing stuff, but there's modest beliefs, who might not be able to, and probably in time. In fact, I think it just the last, it was just at the last central branch meeting there was a comrade who was expressing how grateful he was to the party for having sort of, not even so much to steer, but basically, led him along the sort of path of reality rather than righteousness, and how it basically saved him from this Catholicism that he was brought up as, and he was ever so grateful for that. But therefore, it leads me into thinking, you know, yeah, sure, if there was some members who were or had this kind of underlying sort of religious inclination, why they ought not to be allowed to come in on the understanding that there's every chance that they will be able to drop those and just, you know, support the party case and continue to do so. They may well become really good active members. So I'm still sort of, you know, heading in that direction that maybe we ought to lower the idea a little bit and maybe be inclined towards allowing people with those mild religious inclinations to join and there I'll leave it. Forget what that other bloody thing was I was going to say. Maybe I'll come back again later. Cheers.
Thanks, Paul. I have a question. I'm just very curious about this. Is there anybody here who would take a sort of extreme hard line and say that we should allow nobody into the party who is even the remotest hint of a religious belief? Putting aside people who believe in, established religions and so on and so forth, which I think most of us would reject and what people have been saying, is that somebody would take a really hard line and say you would reject a pagan who liked to celebrate Beltane or somebody who just kind of believed in ghosts but didn't really believe in God. Is there anybody here who would absolutely exclude everybody on those grounds? No, I mean, that's the impression. I've been having a little bit of a game here. I've been marking all right. You all when you... Sorry, Richard, did you want to say something?
Yeah, you didn't give me a chance there. I was going to say that what is the difference with those sort of beliefs? I mean, it's still, to my mind, comes under the broad category of religion. I think it's just a bit of a problem, really, that there's religion, there's spirituality, there's beliefs. I suppose a narrow definition of the word religion is more to do with something like a church or a temple, an organisation, because it's about rules. The religion part is the rules that you follow. And on the whole, there's some pretty good ones, you know, like the Ten Commandments, some of them. Thou shalt not kill. I think I can go along with that. But, yeah, I tend to put all these things together. I mean, if you're a pagan, well, that's just an older religion. I mean, there's all sorts of versions of paganism. But what I really wanted to... originally, why I put myself in the queue was to talk about dogma. And we could be accused of dogma in the same way. It's not the case in this party, but others looking in could say, well, it's just like religion for them. They've got the works of Marx and Engels, which is like the Bible, and they're sort of worshipping these people. And they've got the right, this is, we have to follow the words of these great men. Some organisations do act like that. There are parties where if you quote Marx or Engels or Lenin or Trotsky or whoever, it's very much like being in church. Today's lesson comes from Luke chapter 7 verses 3-8 or whatever. It's that they look at it like that. We do not. I think it's an important message to get across that we're not dogmatic, we're not sectarian. We take a scientific view of the world, and from that we come to the conclusion that's how we draw up our case for socialism. And we're critical. What another human being has written, it's just and what another human has come to these conclusions based on their experience and reading what other people have written and so forth. And we look at that and we've arrived at our policy. based on a scientific, rational reading, analysis of these people's work. And I just wanted to make that out. While a dogma is certainly something you believe in it because you believe in it, because you were told to, it's been drummed into you for so long, and it's very, very difficult to shake it off. I never had that, but I understand it. And I can understand why someone who's been a Roman Catholic from, you know, the moment they were born to get into adulthood, and it's hard to shake it off, but it's like chewing gum stuck to your shoe. Well, it's a bit worse than that, actually, but you know what I mean. Right, I'll stop there.
Okay. Thanks, Rich. As I was kind of saying, I was I've been marking you all out of 10 in terms of your hard and soft line on this, and it's absolutely no surprise to me that all the way through we're averaging 5. This is obviously a really, really difficult and contentious issue, as it is for me personally as well. I honestly don't know any other issue that I've actually had to face as a member of the party which has actually given me more heart searching and difficulty, and I slip from one side to the other of it constantly. Because on the one hand, there is a part of me that really thinks that, you know, practice and theory have to go together, you know, and we really need, and we're a material, we base our argument on a materialist foundation. And I'm thinking, well, what the hell, if somebody is a pagan, you know, who just likes to celebrate Beltane by walking around a fire and having a sweat lodge and something, doesn't particularly believe in God, then what the hell, you know, or even somebody who has a deistical view. Now, I understand the argument about it being a dogma. It does seem a really bizarre thing to believe. But, you know, if there is no institutional element to it, which might influence people's decision-making, and if it's not fundamentally, it doesn't actually mean buying into any kind of dogma, then that part of me thinks, well, what the hell, you know. But anyway, I mean, that's my captain's worth. Alan and Janet want to come back in.
Yeah, I just want to say, Richard, that, you know, when, you know, going back to the young lady that Janet referred to and Mike commented on and Paul commented on, they both had time with her. It's a perfect example, if you like, of why we need to be as a party a little bit more flexible, a little bit more tolerant. I mean, she's somebody who, although in a sense the party has given up on her, she has not given up on the party. And there will be countless other people out there like that. You know, as long as it's made fundamentally clear, the party is not a platform, or you know, that our position is absolutely clear as a party. We need to be more accepting and more tolerant. It's about acceptance. Around the world, there are millions, billions of people bound into some form of religious practice or another. And we're rejecting them. They're human beings. They're part of the human race. And we are rejecting them. They're not giving them the opportunity to be part of what we are. I think that's a great shame. I really think we need to look at what we are and who we are. We don't have to change our basic core beliefs. We don't have to be frightened of these people. But we do need to be accepting that there are ingrained beliefs that are incredibly hard for people to overcome. It's not just Catholicism; it's Islam. There are countless other things around the world, and I really wish that the party could find a way to be more accommodating and more accepting.
Thanks, Alan. ALB. Hello, Adam.
I want to come back to something that the Paul Bennett said. He said there's no question in the questionnaire as to whether you're not you're a materialist, but there is. It's the question on religion. But the whole purpose of that question is to find out whether you have materialist beliefs or you accept the materialist viewpoint. And it's not just historical materialism that we're talking about. It's rejection of creationism. It's basically, the question could be, are you a scientific materialist? And some of these people that have been mentioned aren't. And they say, if you ask a question about, are you a materialist, it becomes a philosophical question. So the way it's been put round is we ask them, are you religious? And if you say yes, then you're not a materialist. On the other thing that came up about whether we're infringing the Equalities Act, I mean, I would love to somebody to sue us and us to be hauled up before the courts for so-called discriminating against a religious person. We would probably get lots of humanists and atheists and rushing to join us, which would be much better people to have in the party than all these weirdos or pagans and goodness knows what.
Alan, do you want to come back on that?
Yeah, I would I would just I don't think there are many people in the world who understand what historical materialism is, let alone whether they believe in some god or other.
Okay, anybody else? Well, Steve.
Two quick points. I'd like us to stop defining ourselves as atheists on a linguistic point of view. I don't see why on earth people with those sort of ideas ought to define themselves by saying, I am not a theist. I think we should refer to ourselves as humanists. So that's a very minor point, but it really annoys me that we need to make any reference whatsoever to fantasy ideas to define ourselves. Secondly, I think what Alan was, I can't agree at all with what Alan was saying. The ultimate consequences for the religious, the Muslims, the Hindus, or I mean, extend that to, well, maybe do we ought to make some allowances for nationalism? The idea of the worldwide nature of socialism. No, it seems to me that's a sort of or an extension of what Alan was saying. That's it.
Just on one point there, it's you can be a religious humanist. You don't actually have to be non-religious to be a humanist. So that I think would be a problem. But anyway, Paddy.
First of all, on that point, I think this idea that if you give way on any point, you give way on all points, that really is dogmatic. The party case is much stronger than that. It's not going to collapse if we change our view or modify our view slightly on one point. So I think that's a bit of a non-argument, really. A couple of other things. I do think this is an interesting subject, and I feel like Richard, I tend to sort of swing both ways on this subject. I really hate the idea of religion. It really winds me up in a way that a lot of things don't. And yet, despite that, I do feel that there is a case that could be made on a case-by-case basis, as I said earlier, and certainly not in a blanket way. Something that I think hasn't been... attention hasn't been brought to an aspect of religion which sort of Janet touched on is the fact that one of the biggest things about religion for a lot of people isn't actually the belief itself. It's the community that it gives you. And I remember a documentary during the time of the Dover School scandal in the States some years ago, some of you might remember it, there was a where the school tried to prevent the teaching of evolution, and the parents ganged up on the school governors to overturn this ruling. It was quite a celebrated case. It was like the Monkey Scopes trial all over again. But during the course of that, they interviewed some of the religious parents, and rather than getting a kind of religious tract about creationism, what emerged from their viewpoint was something really altogether much more down to earth and much more poignant, which was that they didn't want to see their community broken up. The point was made that if you took a sort of anti-religious viewpoint in that community, in that that town, you were having to set yourself in opposition to your own family members, I think that's something that we overlook really when we think about religion, is its non-religious aspect, its social aspect. And this leads me on to the point that Paul was making, which you might say it's a bit optimistic, but that if we let certain people join our party, they might soon drop their daft ideas. Well, the other thing that it would do is it would show them that it isn't only religious people who have communities. It isn't only people who have a sense of social cohesion. Socialists have got that too. So I think most difficult things for religious people probably to do is to leave an established sense of social community and drop into an atheist void, because of course there isn't an atheist community. And for that reason, I agree with Steve that atheist isn't a good word to describe ourselves. It's a negative for a start. A lot of atheists don't like the word atheist for that reason. But we're not that. We're more than a negative. We are a positive. We stand for something quite well defined, and that makes us a community. And so I think that in some cases, and I repeat again, you know, a case by case basis, people who are attached to some kind of sense of community amongst religious people would be able to see that actually they're not swapping a community for emptiness. They'd be swapping a community for another community that probably makes more sense to them if they think about it. And my last point is, somebody mentioned dogma. The point was made, I think Howard made the point the other day in connection to an FAQ session we were having, but it's worth making the point again that if anybody's listening to debate, and it is being recorded, so we hopefully, you know, people will listen to it in the future. Any religious people that you come across who think, well, I don't understand, how can you be so dogmatic about religion? How can you be so hardline? How can you be so unthinking about a religious problem? Point them to this debate, point them to Howard's talk and to this discussion, and say, do you still think we're dogmatic? It's one of the liveliest and longest running arguments in the party.
Okay, Mike Epp.
Yeah, as a sort of an offshoot to one of the points Paddy was making just now, I do think that religion and a socialist viewpoint, they both fulfill the same psychological need in us. It's both of them are explanations for, you know, the important aspects of life, and that they also offer an afterlife, you know, I think socialism as a new society, that's sort of analogous to an afterlife in that it comes after, you know, our current conditions. I think it's an analogy, you know, and that analogy might sort of break down if you look at it too closely. But I do think, yeah, that both belief systems, you know, sort of fulfill a need. And that part of that need is, as Paddy said, you know, a need of a community. You know, we're a community here. So, yeah, I think that's sort of quite an important consideration. And I remember as well, Howard gave a talk at a summer school a good few years ago now, Is Socialism a Faith, which I think touched on similar ideas. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. We've got nobody waiting at the moment. Does anybody want to say anything?
I'll just jump in then before I forget again. That was, well, first of all, I think, as both Paddy and Mike said, maybe not in so many words, and I certainly don't intend to put words in either of their mouths, but I think it's pretty fair to say we'll probably be surprised by just how much both sets of viewpoints have in common, you know, with a very similar aim. I mean, I've had many a discussion with some of these people with very strong religious views and surprised how much we agree on rather than disagree on. So there was that, which I'm glad I got the chance to say and remember to say. The other thing I was thinking about when we were talking about ghosts and the Bible and stuff like that earlier on, I have most nights I go onto YouTube if I'm not listening to my Max audiobooks and I listen to old Victorian ghost stories. Now, I don't believe in ghosts, but I love listening to ghost stories. You know, that's my thing. Not horror, nothing, no blood and guts, just good old-fashioned traditional Victorian-type ghost stories. Likewise, at Christmas time, when we're all coming together with families and for no religious reasons whatsoever other than, you know, it's a time to get together as a family. And more often than not, there are sort of biblical, epic biblical films on the television at that time. And some of them, like Ben-Hur and who's the actor that just died, Spartacus, all these kind of films and Bible stories, I actually find quite interesting. With no kind of inclination towards the whole sort of godliness and spiritual side of it at all. I certainly don't believe in ghosts, but I do enjoy and appreciate all those things. And I know that's different to religious beliefs. But, you know, I think we all need something in our life in which to focus. And, yeah, being part of a group and a community and, community and having that sense of commonality is something that we all enjoy and appreciate. And I think, again, well, I've already said everything else there is to say about that in terms of making allowances for that other side of things. So that was me just about finished for tonight, guys. And it, well, I'll tell you what, it's absolutely awesome to see so many people in the meeting tonight, which is another great sign. So that's me done. Cheers.
Lovely. Thanks, Paul. Right. Does anybody else want to speak now? Howard, do you want to say anything?
You want me to say a couple of final words then? We've been going for quite a long time, so is this going to be a sort of conclusion?
Well, let's just ask. Adam, do you want to say anything before we finish? You're beeping up there. Your logo is beeping. Your icon. No?
Yes, actually. Yes. I can't find a speaking cue. I'm sorry. I'm not.
Don't worry, Mike. Go ahead.
Just a quick question to the MAC people. You know, in the DFP, we get people to sign that they're going to wage war against all other political parties. How many people query that? Howard, you've only known it for a few years, but I'll ask the other members, Paul and Richard, who've been there longer. How many people have you ever queried that? Because I've been told some people have got people interested, their friends, and they get them to look at the DAP. And when they read that, they just hand it back because they don't want to wage war. Yeah, as it says, how many people query that in the MAC? Have you ever raised it?
Mike, never been raised as far as I can remember. I mean, people aren't required to agree to wage war when they join online via the questionnaire. They're not asked if they agree with the object and declaration principles, but maybe they should be. But I suspect quite a few of them haven't even read the object and declaration of principles. They read party literature. They know what we're about, etc. And they, well, some of them anyway, agree. So, as far as I can think, that's never been raised as an issue. I don't know what the other members of the other members of the Members of Applications Committee who are here can, Paul's not here anymore, is he, Paul? But Richard, you are, whether you can think of any cases of that.
Can we keep this short, Richard, if you want to respond, because we're really going off the tangent here.
Okay.
So, I was just going to say, no, I've been in the committees about the same length as Howard, and it's never come up. So I think the Declaration of Principles is, it's just a part of its original language that we've retained. It's just a bit of poetic way of saying it, the wage war. It just means we oppose other people. We're not saying, I think most people would realise, we're not saying that we're going to pick up a gun and shoot a member of another party.
Right. Okay. So is there anybody else finally want to speak before Howard sums up then? No? Okay. Over to you, Howard.
Right. Okay. Well, we've been going for quite a long time, so I won't sort of drag it out much longer, but thanks to everyone who's spoken. I think it's been an interesting discussion. And I think the main thing that has come out of it is that the main thing that most of us are agreed on is that we don't want to come across as dogmatic. We often have been considered rigid and dogmatic in the past on religion as on other issues. When I first joined the party, no doubt a lot of the things people have been saying tonight would have been frowned upon. There was much less flexibility, much less tolerance than there is now. And I think that's all to the good that's changed. And for that kind of reason, I don't think it would be a good idea to put, as has been suggested, extra questions in the questionnaire. I think people would see that as sort of somewhat dogmatic. I mean, they've already got a dozen or so questions to answer. Don't think we'd want more. And I know Paddy's suggestion about engaging people on this platform, people who apply, it's certainly, you know, it's well-meaning. But there again, I think we need to be a little bit careful, because if people apply via the website, and the next thing they know that we're saying, can we speak to you, by the way? We could easily come across as some kind of cult who are trying to lure people in. So I think we need to tread very very carefully in that kind of way. Anyway, yeah, so the main thing, I think, is that we don't want to be dogmatic. We don't want to be rigid. And I think, you know, we are, on the whole, when people do apply for membership, from recent records, we are managing to achieve that. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Howard. Okay, thanks, everybody.